This is Handle on the Law, marginal legal advice where I tell you you have absolutely no case. If you're injured and need a lawyer, go to handleonthelaw.com. And if you're a lawyer and want to join our team, because people desperately need your help, go to handleonthelaw.com and click on the Join Today tab at the top of the page. The following is a pre-recorded program. There's a bill that's been introduced in California by an assemblyman out of Los Angeles, AB 89. And what the bill is about is forcing or saying that police officer candidates, before they turn into cops, have to have a bachelor's degree or turn 25 before they're able to carry a gun and wear a badge. Now, right now, under current state law, peace officers have to be 18 years old and have to have a high school diploma or the equivalent, which is a GED. And what the assemblyman is saying, that the bill, he hopes the bill will reduce the number of times police officers shoot or harm people by adding this educational and maturity component. And he points to a study in 2010 that found that college-educated cops in two cities that were looked at were less likely to use force in encounters with suspects. And there was another study in 2007 that showed the same thing. Officers with bachelor's degrees were less likely to use physical force than those with only high school education. And it makes a lot of sense if you think about it. Why? Because maturity has a lot to do with it. For those of you that are in the 40s, 50s, 60s, go back to the time you were in your 20s or late teens. You're out of your mind. Relative to today, when there is, I'm hoping, some sense of maturity, some sense of looking at the big picture. And so what Jones Sawyer, the assemblyman, is saying is either age over 25 or a bachelor's degree at least. And if you combine the two, you've got a perfect cop, or at least the potential for a perfect cop on your hands, at least as far as using excessive force. And it makes all the sense in the world. Well, look at what insurance companies do. Right? If you've ever insured a kid at 16 or 17 for men, for boys who turn into men, where is the cutoff date when they consider you a full adult? You're 26. You're paying ridiculous rates until you're 26. Why? Because of the maturity level. Because the young people tend to go off, they tend to fly off the handle, and they do. So an 18-year-old cop or a 19-year-old cop with a high school education, and I don't know if the education has more to do with it than just age, but we'll see if this bill passes. I hope so, because it's not only does it make all the sense, you point to the science that says maturity, college degree, and there's tons of studies out there. I mean, this is one of those psychological issues. I can't tell you how many studies are done on maturity and reaction time and making a decision and reacting. Let's take some phone calls. Hey, Manuel, welcome to Handle on the Law.
Hey, hello, how are you?
Yes, sir.
I basically work for CNA. I take care of elder people.
Okay.
And I recently went to an interview. The person that was interviewing me told me that she couldn't hire me, not because of anything, because of me or my qualifications. It was just simply because I'm coming from another facility that I guess they have a thing going on between them. And she just basically told me, I cannot hire you just because you're coming from this facility. And, you know, it was a good paying job, good hours and stuff. And I just want to know if I could go after them.
No.
Just because.
No, they cannot hire you for any reason they want. I mean, you do not have a fundamental right to get hired. Now, if you are discriminated against in the hiring based on race, religion, creed, et cetera, that is a whole different story. But to prove that is almost entirely impossible. I'm assuming by your name And by your accent, you are of a Hispanic persuasion. Is that fair?
Correct.
Okay. Now, yeah, Manuel doesn't sound like Shmuley or doesn't sound like Muhammad, strangely enough. All right. So with that being said, you could, assuming that you are arguing the reason I didn't get hired was because I am Hispanic. But even you said the reason you weren't hired is because you came from a facility that they had a fight with, that they were, and they just didn't want to hire you because you had some connection to that facility. It's perfectly legal. They can do that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, you got it. Yep. And it's, you know, we've had this throughout the entire show where people are calling up, I've been discriminated against, it's so unfair. Absolutely correct. And what people end up doing is somehow conflating the word justice and the word justice in justice system. Justice system is almost a contradiction in terms. Don't ever think that you actually get justice from the system. Occasionally you do, but it's, let me tell you, it's an envelope that you have to be able to slip yourself into. Lewis, yellow Lewis, welcome. Hello, is that Louis?
Yeah.
Lewis? Yes.
Luis.
Luis. Okay, there you go. I could have gone any one of those ways. All right, Luis, what can I do for you?
Okay. First of all, my apologies for bugging you with the same question every 8 years. But I was divorced in 2000, ordered to pay alimony for 10 years, stopped paying after 2 years. She never said anything, never told me her address. She had moved. I haven't heard from her. So what do I do?
All right. Well, how long has it been?
We're going on about 15 years since
you stopped paying. Oh, yeah. I think for her to go back for back spousal support is going to be difficult. What you do nothing. At this point, you don't do a damn thing. You sit and wait for it to happen, and then you have all kinds of defenses. You never let me know where you were. You never followed up. You never contacted me. You knew where I was the entire time. You never said I was in arrears. Even though you have the affirmative, duty to pay. It's not as if she has to go after you, but it's a long way from you having an affirmative duty for you lose her address. She doesn't contact you. Now, I think there'd be some defenses there. But the bottom line, you leave it alone, and the longer you leave it alone, the better it is. 20 years ago, Your Honor, 25 years ago. So that's how you handle it. Just don't do a damn thing. Bridget. Hi, Bridget.
Hi, how are you?
Yes, ma'am. What can I do for you?
Okay, I wanted to ask you, my family is buried at one of the Catholic cemeteries, and I was looking at the codes and policies, and I've been kind of like going back and forth by email with the management over there because their codes and policies say no, like, umbrellas, no folding chairs, no picnicking, you know, at the grave sites. And this has been going on. They have umbrellas. People are setting up those patio umbrellas, beach umbrellas with folding chairs. So I've been going like back and forth with them, and they're not enforcing this. So I don't know at this point, you know, if there's any way, you know, what to do to get them to enforce it. I've already gone to the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. I tried to contact them.
Yeah.
They don't seem to be doing anything about it. It's very disturbing.
You knew there was a problem when you walked into the Archdiocese and the Archbishop was in a lawn chair with an umbrella sipping on a pina colada. You knew that was going to be an issue, didn't you?
Right.
All right. So what can you do? You could probably try to bring a restraining order forcing them to follow their own procedures. But, man, is it worth it? I mean, are you actually going to pay money to hire a lawyer to do that? And in the end, they say, okay, we won't let lawn chairs in. And 6 months later, they let lawn chairs in and you go back into court. And I think technically you do have standing because it's your family that is buried in there and the anticipation and the reliance based on what your folks have. They bought the plot. But then what if they bought the plot?
All right. It's them. All right. It has nothing to do with you. So they bought a plot. You're looking at the procedures where they're not enforcing the lawn chair provision. You know, do you have standing? Because, I don't want to see lawn chairs. I don't want to see picnicking on top of mom's grave, and yet you are. So even that would be an interesting situation as far as standing is concerned. I mean, do you have the ability? Do you have a legal right to sue? God, it's a fascinating case. My guess is you may not. And if you do, it's a pain. Hey, just bring out the lawn chairs and sit on someone else's grave and bring out your little portable TV and just, you know, it becomes a picnic area. I mean, what else can you do? If the Archdiocese wants to do there, you know, what else are you going to do?
Now, right. Well, it's not happening. It's not happening where my family's buried. It's happening, you know, in the parts. Throughout the cemetery.
Yeah.
It looks like a park.
Yeah.
It looks like more of a park than a cemetery.
Yeah, you know, but that happens all the time. There are, I'm trying to think of, there are all kinds of events. You can rent venues in cemeteries. There's one,
wow.
I think, down the street where they have one. It's, you know, it's a big cemetery where you can actually rent their auditorium. It's, they'll bring dead people out. Really interesting. They'll do their demonstrations.
Oh, wow.
All right. Yeah. So the answer is probably not. That's why you want to bury people way, way, way off in the corner so you don't have to worry about paying for it either.
We will return. Okay. This is Handle on the Law. If you're injured and need a lawyer,
go to handleonthelaw.com.
KFI.
AM 640.
More stimulating talk.
Welcome back to Handle on the Law. Hey, Betty. Welcome to Handle on the Law. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I was sold a car in Los Angeles. I was sold a car. I'm a senior citizen, but I never signed the contract with a dealer. A friend of mine that supposedly was helping me fix my credit went and bought it without my even knowing, and then got all the loan and everything with State Farm, and so I didn't want to get her in trouble. So I says, oh, well, if the car's good, I needed a car, I'll just sign the split. Over here, they sent the documents to where I live. Like,
okay, so you did. So you did. So you did sign it.
Not with the dealer. I never saw the car. I never, ever went to the dealer in L.A.
All right, so how did the dealer sell a car to you without any of your signatures unless there was fraud involved on behalf of your friend?
Well, yeah, because she had all of my information because she was.
No, I understand, but who signed? You can't buy a car without signing.
He signed it in his name
or in your name?
In my name.
Okay.
The worst part about it is that the dealer knew they were selling me a car with a gas tank leak.
That part doesn't matter at this point because it's not your car because you never bought it.
Right.
There's no valid sale, Betty. The
mm-hmm.
sale doesn't exist. And if you have the car, you call the dealer and say, get your car back. I want you to take your car back. Have you made any payments on the car, Betty?
Yeah, that's the thing. I made the payments because
I
didn't want to make my...
Well, your friend screwed you pretty well. Betty, how long have you been making payments on the car?
About 5 months. I stopped making them because she said she was going to take the car back.
And she did. I know she did. She obviously didn't.
No.
Okay.
All right. She has the car. She went and she picked up the car for.
That's great. Okay. All right. Fair enough. Now what? So what's your question, Betty?
Well, I don't know and they told me I needed to file a report with the police in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's exactly what you do.
I did it in Orange County because it had been parked there because it couldn't be driven. And she sent some people over there and tricked my friend in getting the keys from them before he knew
All
it.
Right.
They took off with the car.
All right. So you have to file a police report with the, if you're in the city of Los Angeles, that's Orange County. You file a police report. But one police report should do it. And
Orange County wouldn't let me file it because they said,
then file it in L.A. Betty, then file it in L.A. You have to file a police report. That's for starters. How old are you, Betty?
72.
All right. So you are eligible for the law firms that deal with elder abuse, because you're going to argue elder abuse here. And there are firms and organizations you can go to, and you get to do the research. Just put down elder abuse, you put down and just throw some search words on the computer. Elder abuse, representatives, attorneys, that sort of thing. And there are organizations that do it for free. At least we'll talk to you for free. And that's what you're going to have to do. Because you're in way over your head, Betty, allowing all this to happen and help you build your credit. What do you care at 72 that you have good or bad credit? What do you plan on buying anytime soon?
Well, no, I want to just, I'm still working. I mean, I do a business. And
all right, that's fair. Okay, that's fair. All right, I'll buy that. Betty, what do you do, by the way?
I help people. I work with real famous, doctors that have, really good products that literally cure cancer. We just can't use the word the FDA said. They already know it does.
Okay, so you can't use, so you can't sell the product. The FDA won't let you use certain words because they don't want you to commit fraud, correct?
Right, but
yeah, I know. It's so, you know, it's representing those fraudulent products, you have to be very, very careful in how you describe them.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, got it. Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah. No, I understand.
I want to get a hold of Rush. Maybe you know how I could get a hold of Rush Limbaugh.
Why would you want to get a hold of Rush Limbaugh? How do you think Rush is going to help you?
Because I want to send him this product. I mean, if you saw this man on dialysis for 15 years,
yeah,
couldn't pee on his own for 10 of those years, not pee on his own. After taking this product,
he could start peeing on his own.
By the way, just
to let you know, I happen to know Rush's agent pretty well, and I don't think Rush has ever had a problem peeing. I just want to let you know.
No, but he has problem with cancer.
But that doesn't mean he has problem peeing. Do you sell a product that cures cancer?
We can't say that word.
No, but is it? Okay, but, oh, wow. But you can imply that it cures cancer?
Oh, yeah, we have all the documented proof.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, got it. No, good for you.
They wanted to set up.
Okay.
Not only that, I have another doctor where Stanford University told my friend she had 4 months to live. They couldn't help her anymore. That was 4 years ago.
And then she took your fraudulent product and was cured, right?
She went to this regenerative doctor that's in Orange County.
Ah, okay.
That's one, and I have another one it's incredible.
Okay, so let me ask, did the regenerative doctor cure her with your product?
No, with his, with what he does.
So the regenerative doctor has nothing to do with your problem and Rush Limbaugh and any of this, right?
Those are two different doctors.
Okay, great. All right. So Betty, here's what you do. All right, we're going to go back. We're going to go back to the advice I gave you because we went off on a tangent here. Number one, because you were screwed and fraud was committed against you, which is hilarious, by the way. Oh, the irony of this is unbelievable. So, because fraud, was committed against you, what you do is, again, go to the computer, search words, elder abuse, lawyers, fraud, and then put in parentheses, me, close parentheses, and see what you can do. Just a little bit of research, and I'm sure that there'll be lawyers out there that think you're as nuts as I do.
This is Handle on the Law. This is Handle on the Law, marginal legal advice. Hi, Charlie. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Hi, Bill. I really like your show. Here's my problem. I live in San Diego County. I live in an apartment complex, and I have a neighbor from hell. Her dog barks all the time. The dog has bitten me. It has attacked me. It has been off the leash. This lady is bipolar. She's been divorced 4 times. She's keyed my car once, twice, and then yesterday.
How do you know she keyed the car?
Well, I've been here before. She moved next to me 7 years ago. I've been here 19 years, and I never had a problem.
All right. Here's the question when I said, how did you know she keyed the car? Of course you know she keyed the car. But I'm saying, how can you prove she keyed the car?
I know.
Is there a video of her?
No.
That's
what the police said. Too. Yeah, they said it's your word against theirs.
That's exactly right. And then you have to prevail. In other words, you have to have proof that she did it, or at least enough proof. So, unfortunately, unless you video her doing that, that one's off the table. And as far as the dog bite is concerned, how badly were you injured when the dog bit you?
I had to go to the doctor and get a tetanus shot. That's it.
No, that's not very much. Okay, you got a problem there. And your question is what to do about her.
Yeah, and I went to the housing office. This has been going on for 7 years, and they said there's only two reasons you can get thrown out. That's violent act and non-payment of rent. Nothing else they'll throw you out for.
So. Oh, that's not true. Come on. Now, there's plenty of reasons. Interference with neighbors, making neighbors' lives miserable so it becomes uninhabitable, where it becomes untenable for anybody to live there. If enough people said we're moving out, you know, you get her out or you get the rest of us out. Now, there's also rent control issues, too. What city is the apartment in?
Carlsbad.
Okay, I don't think Carlsbad has rent control. So that makes it a little bit easier. And if the landlords won't throw her out, then that becomes a real issue, too. You got a neighbor from hell. And unfortunately, the law is very sloppy when it comes from neighbors from hell. You know, for example, mm-hmm. dogs barking that are too loud. Well, how do you prove the dogs barking are too loud? Well, here's what you do. You get a sound engineer and you get a decibel meter. And I mean, otherwise, how do you prove it? You can't. So
I called the landlady, the lady's in charge of the office. This was on Tuesday. And this dog will bark for 15 minutes straight if anybody comes by. It's a rescue dog that was abused. And I put the phone up and I let her listen to it for 5 minutes. And the dog barked constantly and she didn't do anything. She said, well, I'm sorry. I feel sorry for
you. All right. If they make it so difficult for you, Charlie, you got to bail out, because sometimes you have to just leave the place because it's too difficult legally, especially if you have a landlord that's going to take her side, which clearly is the case, or they just don't want to hassle with it. Now, I'd put a video camera up there. To the point where, and if the landlord doesn't even let you put a video camera in that area for you to protect your car, you have to get out of that apartment building. That's all you okay. do. I mean, it's just there.
Here's the problem. It's low income housing, and I can't afford to move all into right. a regular place.
Okay, so now forget about the landlord. Now you go up the food chain with the low income housing. It's all regulated. And you have to bypass the landlord, the management company, and go straight up the other way and just say it's become untenable, your place is uninhabitable. And if they tell you to go pound sand, Charlie, I mean, what do you do, you know, short of killing her? And then you probably have more issues.
Please don't say that.
No, you know why I'm taking that back? Okay, I retract that 100%. Because as big a pain in the ass she is, it'll probably be more difficult for you if you do that. But thank you for you for correcting me on that, because you're right. That's not good legal advice. Yes, Howard. Hello, Howard. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Yes, you're the only reason I listen to KFI. I love you.
Oh, thank you.
I went from over a 800 FICA to facing bankruptcy. I'm current on my house and truck and utilities. I'm behind on about $30,000 worth of credit cards and some medical. What's my best option?
Well, how much money do you earn?
Right now, zero.
Okay. Then you may want to go for bankruptcy, or you simply cut a deal with your creditors and say, I have no money, I have no job, what can we do, and cut a deal. Sometimes they cut a deal, sometimes they don't. Sometimes they'll give you time to pay it off with no interest or penalties coming in. Yeah. Because one of the horrible thing about owing credit card is that credit card debt, it racks up at about 30% per minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's crazy. And you want to consider...
Can they come after my house?
No,
or
I don't think...
My truck?
No, not really. No, you have exemptions all over the place. No, they can't. So it's time for bankruptcy. Based on, you know, no
Chapter
income.
7 or 13?
It's up to the bankruptcy attorney. It's either 7 or 11. I think one of them, 13, is corporate and seven is individual. I don't do much bankruptcy law, as in never.
Okay.
So just call a bankruptcy attorney. That one's easy. You could also look it up. I mean, theoretically, you could even, based on the few assets you have, do it yourself. It's
wow.
When there's nothing there, you can just follow the bouncing ball. But, you know, you can talk to a bankruptcy attorney, and it'll probably be $800, $1,000. And if you
so they can't come after house equity.
I don't think so.
Equity.
No, I don't think so. Nope. That's my understanding. But this is why you want to go to a bankruptcy attorney, right? Just go to handleonthelaw.com. Paul. Hey, Paul. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Hello.
Yes, Paul.
How are you?
We don't ask that question because I know you don't care and I care even less. So what can I do for you?
Couple unmarried buys a condo 3 years ago, and they file it as the one that dies, the other one gets it.
Okay.
What they call that.
Joint tenancy.
Right. To change that, since they've been breaking up, if either one of them wants it to go to somebody in their family, the half, what happens?
Well, since it's joint tenancy, then what ends up happening is they have to, both of them have to transfer the property into something called tenants in common. So each of them own half the property. Otherwise, you simply have to force the sale of the home. If the other joint tenant doesn't agree to the transfer, you can't force a transfer. Now, theoretically, you can do a buyout, but the other side, I don't want to sell. Then you go into you go into a motion called a partition where the sale of the house is forced. But you cut a deal, and, there's no there is an upside and a downside. Because, for example, if I'm a joint tenant with you and you want out, I'm going to go, no. No, because I like the idea of when you die, I get the property. And I don't care if I die that you get the property. So those are a set of circumstances. So those are the choices. If both sides agree to put it in tenants in common, which means that each side owns half, then it can go to the heirs. It can go who's ever designated. The house can be forced to be sold, and then they split the money. Those are the only choices you have. Because who's ever on the deed, you can't force that person to do anything unless there is a court order. And the court is not going to order someone to sign off. It's just they don't do that.
Okay, this is Handle on the Law. If you're injured and need a lawyer, go to handleonthelaw.com.
KFI AM 640.
This is Handle on the Law, marginal legal advice, where I tell you, you have absolutely no case. Hi, Maria. Welcome to Handle on the Law. What can I do for you?
I have a trust question. I am the sole trustee of a bypass trust that was established at my husband's passing. My son, who is the only beneficiary, has turned the age in which he can take over the trust. Does this mean I need to change all assets ownership to read just his name?
Maria, it's still in the name of the trust.
Right.
The trust still owns the property. The only difference is now the new beneficiary, does the trust, who the beneficiary is your son, correct?
Only beneficiary, yes.
Okay, so your son, it comes of age. Does the trust now simply distribute the money to him, or he becomes the trustee?
He becomes a trustee.
Okay, then that's it. Then he becomes a trustee, and that's it. So now he acts on behalf of the trust, and basically,
I'm not really sure if he becomes a trustee or if he, uh, of he, uh,
If he just receives the money, right? Okay, you have to.
Yeah, so
all right.
I am in doubt.
All right, you have
so,
to look at the trust.
I mean,
Maria, you have to look at the trust. You read the instrument and see what it says.
Okay.
It's that simple.
Let's say if it says I distribute the money. So I need, in that case, I need to change all the assets.
No, you change nothing. The trust still owns all of the property.
I don't need to do anything then.
No. What happens is if you have a trust and the trustee signs the document, signs checks, for example, within the trust, all he does is go to the bank and say, here's the trust. I'm now the sole beneficiary. I'm of age. I'm the trustee. I want my name on the accounts and nobody else's. Hey, Tony, welcome to Handle on the Law.
I have a workman's comp case that was settled, and I had to see a neurologist and everything. It was settled for over $250,000.
Wow.
And somehow I got swindled where, not to say swindle, I don't mean that. I do. I don't have my money.
Hold on. Okay, hold on a second, Tony. When were you awarded the $250,000?
2018.
2 years ago?
Yes.
And you have not gotten your money. Have you asked the attorney for your money?
Yes.
All right. Here's what you get to do. What does he say?
They have it in it with the annuity company, and they've given me like $16,000 every year for the next 20 years.
All right. Did you, now it gets a little complicated. Did you agree for the firm to put it into annuities?
No.
Okay.
I didn't know nothing like this.
Okay. So they didn't do it on their own. Tony, the fact is they didn't rip you off. All right. It's not as if they stole your money. It's someone decided that giving Tony $250,000 in one lump sum is not a good idea. Someone make that decision, Tony, and you get to figure out who it is. Now, it could be that someone came in and I see on the screen where you have said, I have mental health problems. Is that what you told the screener?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that was part of my case.
Okay, and it could be that part of the settlement was that the money does go into an annuity to pay you $16,000 a year because it's just better for you. Particularly if you've admitted, I have mental health problems, then it gets very easy for a conservator or the judges saying, hey, he gets the money, but Your Honor, can you please order that it goes into an annuity program where Tony gets X number of dollars a year, in this case, $16,000. So you get to call the attorney and go, how did this happen? But it sounds like, Tony, they haven't ripped you off. It sounds like actually they're protecting you based on what you're telling me. The screener, as you were swindled and lied to, is that what you said? I don't know if under what circumstances they painted it. They may have not told you. They have a duty to tell you. But the good news, you're starting from a point where it doesn't look like you've been ripped off or been lied to and you lost $250,000. I get those phone calls, Tony, and you're not in that category. Thank goodness for you. Call the law firm and go, hey, how did this happen? Who said that the money goes into an annuity program? You've already done that?
Yes.
And what did they tell you?
They tell me they're going to file a suit and see if they can get my money.
Wait a minute. Hold on. They got your money because they're the ones that have to put it into an annuity. Unless the settlement goes that it goes directly into an annuity and they had to agree to that. So I don't understand how it goes in without your okay or without a conservatorship being filed. You've got to call the law firm and say exactly what happened. You've got to find out what happened. That's the start.
Okay, this is Handle on the Law.
How
is Handle on the Law, marginal legal advice where I tell you you have absolutely no case. If you're injured, need a lawyer, go to handleonthelaw.com. And if you're a lawyer and want to help our listeners, please go to handleonthelaw.com, click on the Join Today tab at the top of the page. The following is a pre-recorded program.
I don't know if you're a fan of that television show Tiger King, starring the one and only Joe Exotic, and it was one of the weirdest shows, riveting, where most of America couldn't help but tune in. Anyway, there's a whole series of issues that were involved and how Joe Exotic and Carol Bassett, who owns a sanctuary, and he and her have been fighting for years and years. He accuses her of killing her husband 20 years ago, and a lot of people think that did happen. In any case, he, Joe Exotic, was convicted of arranging to kill her, a murder for hire, and was convicted, and I think he got 20 years, and he's sitting in jail right now. So he has asked the president for a pardon. And he is now suing the Justice Department over the administration's rejected of his pardon request. Now, the way a pardon request goes, it's sent to the pardon attorney. And the pardon attorney, part of the Department of Justice, is responsible for receiving these pardon requests. And it's by the thousands. And then vets all of the incoming requests. And then forwards to the president those that the pardon attorney think are either valid or the president has a chance of signing. And what Joe Exotic did is he is arguing that the denial of the pardon is not valid because the request was not presented to directly to the president himself. And the suit names the acting pardon attorney of violating law, and I can't wait for this one. Here is at best that the pardon goes directly to the president, assuming they settle, and the pardon attorney, because of that, doesn't want to deal with litigation, and it goes directly to the president. Then does Joe Exotic get pardoned? Of course not. Although you never know. In the complaint, Exotic alleges that he is a supporter of the president, and therefore, I guess he thinks that he has a shot of being pardoned. Now, keep in mind, the president got 70 million votes. And among them, I'm guessing, are a lot of people that have either been convicted or are awaiting trial or are under investigation. I would say probably by the tens of thousands, or certainly by the thousands. And the assumption is, if I voted for the president, if I support the president, if I donated to the campaign, therefore, I am eligible for and should receive consideration in my pardon request. I don't think that works that way. So in any case, actually, President Trump said that he would take a look at the pardon request. Whether he did or not, I don't know. Advocates for Exotic reportedly spent $10,000 at the president's hotel in Washington in a obvious attempt to curry favor with the president. But is it going to happen? No. No. Interesting lawsuit, though. I've never seen anything like this. Let's take some phone calls. Hey, Angelo. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Thank you, Bill. I have a lien on a piece of property that's going up for sale for taxes. Does that mean my lien will get canceled out?
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't know if the tax buyers would have.
Yeah,
to
the,
cover
lien,
the lien.
No, the lien gets is removed. The lien. What's going to happen is when it is sold for taxes, assuming that the property is worth far more than the taxes are. Then whatever is left over goes to lien holders, and whatever is left over after that goes to you. So it depends on how much equity there is in the home. But yeah, a lien gets wiped out. It's pretty gone. Hey, Andrew, welcome to Handle on the Law.
Well, I inherited my father's vehicle in Seattle, Washington. I'm having a terrible time getting the title transferred to my name. He died of COVID April 2nd. And is this in your department? Do you think you could help me?
Well, let me ask you a few questions. You inherited your dad's vehicle. I don't know what that means. Does that mean he tried to transfer title? Is there a will?
It's handled by an estate, a trust company.
Okay. All right. So what you have is it's not up to you. You have to be handed the ownership. In other words, you have to prove the DMV that the vehicle is owned by the trust and that the trustee has the legal ability to transfer your name. So the DMV will give you all that paperwork. You can't just walk in and say, I inherited this from my dad. They're going to laugh at you. You have to go through the process. So the vehicle was held in your dad's name or in the trust's name?
Well, he passed away, and so all the assets that he has is handled by the trust.
Now, I understand. Was the vehicle in the trust?
It says basically the trust company, and there's a representative.
Hold on a minute. Wait. Title? No, I'm not. Title of that vehicle, it is in your dad's name, or is it in a trust?
Yeah, it says legal owner, the title here, and then below.
Forget about that. The lien holders doesn't matter. Who's the legal owner of that vehicle?
That's confusing because.
No, it's not. It's not. If you look at the title, there are probably two entities on there. The legal owner and then underneath the lien holder.
It's him. It's my father. Yes.
Okay. It's your father's name. Well, the trustee has no right to transfer ownership because that's out of the trust. It's your dad. And your dad, probate has to be open because it's owned by the estate. And somebody who is in charge of the estate, and that would be an executor of the trust of the estate, then has to, with the court, get permission of transferring all the property. Yeah, I mean, I can see why the DMV isn't going to transfer, because who the hell are you? Yeah, but my dad died. Okay, congratulations. But he owned a car. Okay, what? You think because he died, you get everything? We're going to recognize that you are the owner? What if he leaves the car to someone else in the will?
Okay, this is Handle on the Law. If you're injured and need a lawyer, go to handleonthelaw.com.
KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk.
MC.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, what does MC stand for, MC?
Mary Carmen. One word.
Mary Carmen. Okay. And MC. All right. That's kind of neat. I don't often hear that that used as initials. All right. What can I do for you, MC?
My love, I have a situation. Can I go back to court after the case is closed and ask the judge to continue with paternal DNA tests? This is what happened. I had an uncle who died. Before he died, I promised him that I was going to find his child. He kept saying he had a child. He said it was a Korean veteran of war. He was in the convalescent hospital for 60 years saying he had a child. The family denied that he had a child. that he never did, that he was just mentally crazy. He was hit in one accident at the Korean War, and that's the reason why he was mentally convalescent. I took care of this old man. I heard him complaining. I heard him saying things. I asked the family, why is he saying he has a child? Any of my cousins his child? And the whole family said no. I heard some rumors, but no. He keeps saying at the moment I met him that he had a daughter. And he keeps saying the name of the daughter. Well, I do have a cousin with that name. But I asked my mom, and she says, no, you know, when he was in our country, that girl could not be his daughter because I was there when she was born, and he was already in the country prior, and it was the period of time does not match. So,
okay, ma'am, see, we have to make it a little bit quicker than that.
Okay.
All right.
So I went to court with an attorney. The attorney sold himself to the other party, and I ended up going by myself in front of the judge, and the judge heard my case.
All right, wait a minute. Wait. But hang on a second, MC. You hired an attorney, and then the attorney went to the other side?
Yeah, the attorney was purchased by the other side.
I don't even know. How do you purchase an attorney to switch sides?
They told him to convince him, there's nothing here. We'll pay your bill.
Wow. So he withdrew from the case.
No, I went to court and I told the judge, and I reported him to the California Bar Association. And I told the judge, the guy sold himself to the other party. I hired the large DNA company in the world to do the DNA, and the DNA came out iffy. And they said, most of my family is not who they are now because I did all this DNA. All of the siblings are more...
MC, we're going off in way different directions. You did a DNA test. You produced a DNA test to prove that this cousin is the son or the daughter
of
the man. And it was it was equivocal. Mm-hmm. There was no proof. It was not one way or the other. Right.
It shows up that he was 99.99%.
That he was the father.
That he was. Right.
And but the judge closed the case saying he wasn't the father. Is that right?
No. I went to court and told the judge that my attorney sold himself to the other party and that I would like to continue with the case by myself. And the judge said, let me read your case and I'm going to take it home because he heard the case was
okay. All right. So we have to make this a little quicker. You're taking a long time.
They have four attorneys against me. So I went to the judge and I said to the judge,
Why would they have four attorneys against you to establish a DNA proof there's a daughter out there if a guy's been in a convalescent home for decades? Why is it so
because
important?
There was money.
He left a lot of cash.
$700,000 in cash.
Four attorneys? And okay. Then, all right. And
then the attorneys.
And how did you get, what relationship do you have with this child?
Well, at the beginning, I thought he was my cousin.
All right, but he's not. So what
he's
relation?
Nothing.
How do they let you go into court? Who are you?
I don't know, but somebody who defends somebody's right.
That's not you.
I wrote a motion. I wrote everything. I went to the California Bar Association. I did all of it by myself.
Wow, and they let you into court. Okay, so what did the judge say?
I made a mistake, Jeff. The next time we had a motion, the next time we had an appointment, I made a mistake. I got really scared, and I pulled out.
Okay, so you went through the case.
The judge was mad at me for pulling out because the judge was going to punish them all.
Okay, so now let me throw a question. So the judge dismissed the case. Is that correct?
The judge just let them have the money, and he was very angry at me for pulling out.
Did the judge dismiss the case?
Yes.
Judge dismiss the case with prejudice or without prejudice?
Bill, I don't know that answer.
That doesn't help me. None of this helps me, unfortunately, because none of it makes sense. All right. Where you actually can walk into court and your attorney gets bought off and joins the other side. And I mean, it's just it's impossible for that to happen. And a great story, but I have no idea where you're going with that. All right. I thought I was going to go in a way that I could actually jump into it.
All right. This is Handle on the Law. Marginal legal advice, where I tell you, you have absolutely no case. Hi, Jim. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
My daughter is scheduled to get married in a local winery in Riverside County. It was a 4-hour ceremony, paid in full, $20,000. They were to provide the ceremony, the food, the music, and alcohol. Okay, so due to the COVID, it was rescheduled. We tried to work with them. We rescheduled. Now they're telling us that we can have the ceremony, but they're going to have the reception on a different day. So I attempted to try to tell them, hey, you know what, I want to cancel it. The cancellation normally is 200 days. You have 200 days prior to the wedding to cancel. Obviously, because of what's going on, we were unable to do that. So the question is, they refused to give us our money back.
Yeah.
They said, even if you did.
All right, hold on. I'm confused, okay? So they'll give you the wedding on one day, but the reception another day. Why wouldn't you move the wedding in the same day of the reception?
Because they don't know when we'll be able to have the reception. In other words, we can reschedule the wedding.
Oh, I see. Got it.
But why?
Okay, because the wedding is easy because you don't have to have the food and all of that. So they're saying the wedding ceremony itself, they'll let you use their place. But as far as all the rest of it, they have no idea when they're going to perform it. Well, you can say no to that. You can ask for your money back. Their argument is going to be, we can't do it because of the COVID. As soon as the COVID restrictions are lifted, which they're not yet, this is one of those where no one really knows what's going on. If you look at the contract, on what basis are they allowed to cancel, or what basis are they allowed to not go forward? Probably a force majeure contract, which means...
That is not in the contract, Bill. That's
okay.
Not in the contract. Sure.
You know what? I don't know where to go with that. If you sue them, you're going to have to sue them in, if you want to do it without a lawyer, small claims, or you can do it yourself.
Right.
As to a breach, and there this is one that's wide open. I mean, you're not the only one, and no one knows what's going on. Are they being reasonable at all?
Well, apparently, no, they're not, because what they're saying, hey, you can have the wedding on this certain day that we've already picked, but it's still going to cost you $20,000. The reception is basically is what we're offering.
No, you can't. No, well, they're offering you nothing. They're offering you nothing.
Right.
All right. So whatever they think is a reasonable offer, that doesn't exist. So now it's an issue of they've canceled and they don't know when that's going to be able to be put back on. And so what do you do with that? I want my money. They're saying no. I can't do it. They're saying we are prepared to, but we're under COVID restrictions. No, I would do a little research and find out if these lawsuits have been filed. I'm sure they have. And there are lawyers out there that have done exactly that. Now, for $20,000, that's a little bit, you know, you don't want to hire one. But it could be that there are lawyers that effectively have templates off there. Whereas it's almost just fill in the numbers at this point and the dates, because so much of this has gone on. So just throw there, mention wedding venues, lawsuits, cancellations. Just throw all those words and see what what comes up with, because you're in new ground, as we've often said before. Man, and there's no force majeure provision. Force majeure is basically an act of God. Which cancels everything. For example, let's say you have a business and you owe rent on the business, $5,000 a month for the facility. An earthquake comes and wipes out the building. Guess what? You're not paying rent anymore. Why is that? because an act of God, force majeure, made it impossible. And we don't even know if COVID, if the COVID virus is considered a force majeure yet. It's just, it's way up in the air at this point. Jared. Hi, Jared. Welcome.
So I purchased a GoPro with a large accessory kit from a third-party seller on Amazon, and I was foolish. I bought from Amazon. I didn't read the reviews, and I get the product in the mail, and the two reasons why I bought it was for the LED light and the two spare batteries. The LED light was missing. The two spare batteries are incompatible. I go and I read the reviews. I find out other customers complained about the same problems. They were charged restocking fees and shipping fees. I complained to Amazon. Amazon's done nothing about it.
And?
And so I was just wondering if I had a case against him.
Against the guy who sold you the product? That wasn't what he said?
Exactly.
Yeah, of course you do. I mean, it's here's what I'm going to sell you. It's, and if it's not what I sell you, then I've either misrepresented or caused fraud. So how much did you spend for the GoPro with the accoutrements?
$476.
Okay. And how, if you were to replace the, if you were to buy batteries and the LED light, how much would that cost you now?
That would cost me definitely over $100 plus shipping.
Okay, so you're out $100. Go ahead.
I would feel I'd be entitled to next day shopping to fulfill his original shipping date that he promised when we made the deal.
All right.
He offered me a partial refund, but I turned it down. I said, no, I need $300 or we're going to court.
All right. So where's he located?
In New Jersey, right. And I'm in Indiana.
Good. So here's what you get to do. You get to jump on an airplane and fly to New Jersey. File a small claim suit in New Jersey, fly back home. Then the day of the court case, you show up, fly back into New Jersey, you show up. And if I were him and really want to screw with you, I'd write to the court saying, you know, I can't show up. I'm sick or I had a car accident or whatever. Can we postpone? And the judge says, sure, not a problem. So when you walk into court, he smiles, says, I'm sorry, it's been postponed. We'll come back in another 6 weeks. You get to go back home. Mm-hmm. You get to fly out to New Jersey again, argue the case. Hopefully you win and you get your $400 or whatever. At this point, just take your money, what you can get, and get the hell out of there. It's just not worth
it. I think a road trip to New Jersey sounds fun.
Then do it. You can do it a few times.
It's not about the money. It's about the principle. Now, do you think I need a lawyer?
Why don't you get a lawyer? Because they start at $500 an hour. And you want to hire a lawyer for a $400 debt that's owed you. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Then what you do is I would contact, if you don't want to even go to small claims court, where you get to go out there and file a suit, just do it. You go look up small claims court in New Jersey, New Jersey law, and file the lawsuit. You may even be able to file it distantly. I mean, you'll have to show up. Unless they let you do it
I think it sounds fun. I could use some time off work and a vacation.
Then go for it. But the answer is yes, he's liable. Okay, this is Handle on the Law. If you're injured and need a lawyer,
go to handleonthelaw.com.
KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk.
Cause baby,
I'll try to make this succinct and you can ask me to fill in the blanks. So back in 2019 in January, I had a stroke due to my blood pressure spiking because I ran out of my meds. My physician of 27 years died the previous November, and I had called to ask for a refill on my medication that I've been taking for years.
Called who?
And they refused. the doctor's office.
The doctor's office refused to fill the prescription. Did they ask? Did they tell you why?
Yeah, they said that they needed to see me first.
Okay.
And so I was going out of town at that time on a job and could not get in. And I said, great, no problem. I will be happy to come in once I get back. And they said, nope, we're not going to give you anything until you get here. And I said, I have literally 5 days of meds left, and I know I can't just kind of stop them. So I said, I'm sorry, I will absolutely come in the moment I come back. But it's not like I'm asking for pain meds. I was asking for blood pressure meds that I've been taking for 20-plus years. So on the 19th of January, I had a stroke. I ended up in the hospital in San Antonio, Texas. I live in California. Was in San Antonio, Texas for a month and a half. I came back. I have since nearly fully recovered, which is wonderful. But in the meantime, I'm wondering, do I have a case of medical malpractice against the physician?
Yeah, that's interesting. And I'll tell you why I don't think so. That's my guess. That doesn't mean you're not going to call a med mal attorney and get a get an opinion otherwise, because you'd be an idiot not to. But here are my thoughts. Their position is, hey, doctor's gone, he's dead. You were his patient. Before we do anything, we've got to see you. The new doctor is going to be assigned to you, has to look at you, examine you before anything happens. Get into the office. You're saying, I don't have a chance to get in. I'm going on a job. I'm going out, whatever. And their position is, hey, we're not going to commit malpractice by just issuing you medication when the doctor is dead and we want a new doctor to, in fact, examine you. They're going to argue that would be malpractice. Just here's some medication.
Yeah, I kind of thought of that. But my only argument, of course, against that is, look, I've been on it for almost 30 years.
But they don't care.
Yeah, and obviously, yeah.
Yeah, because here is the other argument. What if it goes the other way? You've been on it for 30 years, and they just willy-nilly keep on giving it to you, and there's a change, and you don't see the doctor. That doesn't work either. By the way, that's not to say that there isn't, because both sides have an argument. But I'm willing to guess, Lee, that there ain't much there. Because I tell you, in the end, you go, hey, what's more important to you? How do you get off blood pressure medication? What kind of job on this planet is important enough to do that, where you can't say, hey, I need one more day. I have to see my doctor's office. I have to go to my doctor.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's a show that I absolutely couldn't be without, and I am actually raising my young grandson.
Okay,
and
all right,
taking
so, care of all right.
my mother. So
fair enough. All
I
right,
can't
so,
be without the income.
All right, I got that. So, is it possible for you to have? And I'm just trying to figure out practically. Saying I'm leaving on the day or the day after. Can I see someone right now? What was the time frame between you asking, can I see a doctor? Can I get a medication? They said no. And you actually physically getting on an airplane and moving?
The next day.
Next day. All right. The other possibility is, no, you're right. That's a real interesting one. In the end, though, it was your choice not to go to the doctor.
Right, and I totally get that part of it. My other concern, and maybe this will modify it as well, was I really don't know what my losses are, because my recovery has been pretty complete.
Yeah, it's not a question of losses.
I didn't lose really anything.
Right.
I didn't lose any income.
Except except you were recovering from a stroke, and you lost mobility. You lost... that was the other thing, other question we were going to,
right.
Because in the end, granted, it was a stroke. It wasn't, but it wasn't life threatening. Clearly, it doesn't screw up your life. You're going to go back to normal. You haven't lost any money. And so is a lawyer going to take it? Probably not, because there isn't enough money there. But, good for you for thinking it all through, thinking of both arguments. And I think you're right. There's not much there.
All right, this is Handle on the Law.
Hey,
is Handle on the Law. Marginal legal advice where I tell you, you have absolutely no case. If you're injured and need a lawyer, go to handleonthelaw.com. And if you're a lawyer and want to join our team, because people desperately need your help, go to handleonthelaw.com and click on the Join Today tab at the top of the page.
The following is a pre-recorded program.
In Michigan, there is a fascinating lawsuit filed by a Michigan man, and it had to do with this 42-year-old man, David Working, who for some reason or another moves back in with his mother and father. Already you start questioning that, although in this day and age, I don't think it's that unusual. So he brings with him his extensive porno collection, a collection of pornography and sex toys. And then after a period of time, I think a question of months, and he had moved in because of the divorce in 2016. All right. So I can understand him moving back in for a period of time. I remember when I was 36, I moved back in with my parents for a year after breaking up with a girlfriend of some 9 years. And I stayed a few months and then bailed out. So I can't get too upset about this. In any case, he brings his porn and the sex toys collection into the home, and then he leaves it. And upon leaving it, he realizes that the box containing all of his collection is gone. And he goes back to his parents, who say, yes, we threw it away. It is disgusting. It is horrible. Obviously, a moral objection. And you shouldn't have it. You shouldn't be immoral. And so his entire collection is gone. He sues his parents, arguing that the stash that he had was worth $25,000. The couple claim they warned their son not to bring the porno mags or movies or toys into his home when he moved in. And the judge, frankly, didn't believe them. The judge wrote, this defense falls on both the facts and the law. Plaintiff is entitled to summary judgment. He won. The judge agreed. It didn't matter if it was pornography. That's legal. I mean, it wasn't child pornography. It wasn't pornography that is deemed illegal. And there's plenty of those where it goes beyond the pale. This is run-of-the-mill porno. And so the judge said, this is his, you know, these belong to him. This is his property. And you threw it out without his permission. You effectively converted it. Conversion means you keep it. And therefore, you're responsible for the value. And actually, I think he argued they even stole it. And the judge wrote, in this case, there's no question that the destroyed property was David's property. The defendants repeatedly admitted they destroyed the property. They don't dispute that. But they're saying that because it was immoral, they don't have they have a right to destroy it. How quickly do you think the judge came down and said David wins this one? And now the issue is, how much was it worth? He claims $25,000. He doesn't have the pornography, and unless he kept a running inventory of the titles and specificity as to the toys, the marital aids, he's going to have a hard time proving any specific amount. So now the only issue is, how much was this worth? And the parents are going to have to fork over. All right, let's go ahead and take some phone calls. Hey, Edmund, welcome to Handle on the Law.
Well, hi, Bill.
Yes.
I've got a slight problem, not a problem. Anyway, I got a 10-acre parcel of property I put up for sale, and the buyer put down a down payment on it. After that, I told him that I wanted to retain 100% of the oil rights for me and my heirs. And then he said, oh, I want the oil rights. I didn't, I never advertised the oil rights, just the property. So now I'm wondering who's right.
Well, wait a minute. Well, let's look at, okay, you put up the property, and in the sales agreement or your advertisement, you didn't say you're buying this property and I'm keeping the mineral rights. You didn't say that
right.
in the advertisement, did you?
No.
Okay, do you have a sales agreement with the buyer at this point?
It's at the point that that we keep on negotiating something.
Okay, so you don't have a sales agreement. Nothing's been signed.
No.
Oh, then you're fine. Then you can. Then you don't have a deal yet. Then you can say I want to keep a mineral rights. And he says no, I want him. You go, okay, then we don't have a sale.
I didn't get. Let's see, maybe I can back up a little bit. My son was handling all the paperwork. I live out in the Menifee Valley, and he lives in L.A.
Yeah, I don't care. I don't care if your son's handling all the paperwork. My question is, do you have a signed sales agreement?
No.
Okay, then you don't have a sale. Then you're still negotiating. And part of the negotiation is, I want to keep the mineral rights. Thank you. Conversation over. I don't understand where you're going beyond that. And if you put down a deposit, which I don't understand how anybody would put down a deposit without a sales agreement, because there's no, you don't have an agreement as to price legally, because it has to be in writing. You don't have an agreement as to how it's going to be paid. Is it immediately? Is it going to be financed? I mean, all of that has to be put in an instrument. So at this point, you're still negotiating, and you're just sitting, you guys are horse trading, except you're mineral rights trading, because that's not horses, although it could be. Hello, Mike. You're up. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
Question for you. My son is just turned 21. A few months after he turned 18, he was arrested for something that caused some bodily injury. And he pled guilty just recently and now is going to be sentenced for prison. But the person that he hurt also launched a civil suit for $1 million against him and the school district because it was actually on school grounds.
Okay.
So my question is, he's obviously in jail incarcerated since he's over 18. We're not directly involved in the suit. But how
right.
Should he get a lawyer? How would
now,
he get a lawyer?
Now, why would he get a lawyer? No, he's already going to be criminally responsible, and then that's done. And then the only issue is the amount of damages. There's no defense. Once he has said, I've done it or been convicted of doing whatever the deed was that caused the injury, then the only thing that the victim has to do is just say, here are my damages.
Okay.
And he's 18. He has no money.
Exactly.
So even if there is a judgment that comes against him, he goes bankrupt on it. That's it. What did he do? What did he do, incidentally?
He basically stabbed somebody.
Stabbed someone? Boy, that's an altercation. And he did it on school grounds? What school? High school?
High school. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
After hours, but still.
Yeah, it's been much better if he did it during school time, you know, I mean, because that's always a better stabbing time. That's...
Now, does he have any... Does he or the defendant, the victim, have any claims on our house?
No, you're not responsible at all.
Okay.
You're not responsible. He's on his own. He is done. And who's defending him? Is it a public defender?
He had a public defender.
Yeah, you're
he
fine.
He ended up taking a plea deal, so he pled guilty to all charges and for a reduced sentence from, I think, like 18 years down to 8, something like that.
So he's going to do 8 years in prison. Wow, that's a long time. It's a long time. Yeah, don't worry about any civil responsibility here. He goes bankrupt immediately on anything that is substantial, and you are not responsible at all.
Can they go after his SSI?
SSI can't be touched. Well, hey, Nancy, welcome to Handle on the Law. What can I do for you?
My mother got a will done, and my brother said that they didn't notarize it. And I was wondering, does a will have to be notarized?
No, absolutely not. A will only has to be signed by witnesses. Two witnesses that can attest, yes, that's the person who signed the will, and that person is completely dead. Now, they don't have to attest to the death, but they have to attest to that when the testator, that is the person who dies, has in fact signed that document. That's it.
Okay, this is Handle on the Law.
If you're injured and need a lawyer,
go to handleonthelaw.com.
KFI. AM 640.
the law, marginal legal advice. Mike. Hello, Mike. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
I bought a mattress a while back from Ashley Furniture. It's a Sealy mattress. Took 3 weeks for it to get delivered. And then when it was taken out of the packaging, it has a strong chemical smell. It's been 2 weeks now, and there's still a strong chemical smell. I can't sleep on the mattress. It makes me sick.
Okay.
And I'm getting such a problem with Ashley trying to get it returned.
That's interesting, because Ashley's a big company. I mean, I have bought from Ashley before, and, you know, it's a big-time company that has a good reputation for customer service. So I'm kind of surprised. Are they just ignoring you?
Basically.
All right. You want to go to corporate then, because you don't want to do anything legal at this point. I mean, you know, theoretically, if they give you a runaround and keep them going, no, you sue them for the price of the mattress, and you say, I want a new one, but you're not even near there yet. It's a question of just getting to the right person. So it's a huge company. I mean, they're all over the country. So you know what? Just you do a little bit of research, find out who somewhere in the customer relations department, there has to be a vice president in charge of smelly mattresses somewhere in there. And you just contact that person and say, hey, what's going on? Everything in writing. I mean, nothing in phone calls. That doesn't help you at all, because everybody will deny phone calls. But you say, you go up the corporate ladder saying, hey, I wrote on this day, and then I wrote on this day, and I haven't got an answer back. And the reason I went to you, because you guys are Ashley. You're one of the premier companies that I trust. What is happening? By the way, I am not accusing Ashley of doing this, because as far as I know, Mike can be making all this up. By the way, Mike, I'm not disparaging you, but you know what? I'd rather disparage you than Ashley, because they have the money to sue me. You don't. So it's one of those things where you do not want to take the legal avenue. Just start calling. Paul. Hey, Paul, welcome to Handle on the Law.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Bill, 9 months ago, I put a $1,000 deposit on a 2020 Corvette with a dealership, and about 4 months ago, maybe three, 4 months ago, they called me to go over there and build the car. So I did, and they gave me a printout with the price that the car is going to cost so much. Now, when about 2 weeks ago, the car arrived here and I went to pick it up, they wanted to charge me $5,000, and they did, over sticker price.
All right, but you had already signed a contract saying you were going to get it for sticker price.
No contract, but they gave me the printout with the sticker price.
Hang on. Wait a minute. Hold on. You write a $1,000 check as a deposit. What does that paperwork say on that $1,000 deposit document?
It only says it's a deposit for a 2020 car.
All right. So you don't know the price at that point. It's just $1,000. I want the car. All right. So now
you go
pick up the car. And the contract now says $5,000 more than sticker, right?
No, there was another meeting. They called me 3 months ago. I paid the $1,000 9 months ago. About 3 months ago, they called me and said, come on down. You can build the car, which you can put any kind of accessories you want to pick. And when I did that, they gave me a printout from the computer with the price. This is the sticker price. These are your accessories. The total is so much, but it doesn't say anything about $5,000.
Okay, but it's not a contract, right?
No,
it is not a purchase contract agreement. It is simply, here's the sticker price. Here are the prices of the add-ons, right?
Correct.
Okay,
correct.
And now when they give you a contract, it's $5,000 more than the sticker price and all of the add-ons. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
And now, yes, they can, because that is the sales document.
I see.
Yeah, it's just because it wasn't a promise. It was simply, here are the prices, here is the sticker price, and here is the cost of the additional I don't even know what they call that, because I always
accessories.
Accessories, yeah, whatever the hell they call it, yeah.
And, no, the contract is the contract. So, no. You if you want the car, you get $5,000. You get to pay $5,000 more. And I'm assuming they're offering your $1,000 back, right, if you don't want to buy it?
Yes, correct. Okay, yeah. I got credit for the $1,000.
All right, then you're fine. Yeah. Then, no, just because they give you a printout, unless it is, this is a purchase agreement. This is what we will sell the car for you. Boom. That's not what he said. He just said, I got a document that says sticker price and the accessories. No, that's not a sales document. Karen. Hello, Karen. Welcome to Handle on the Law.
I purchased services from a dermatologist. The dermatologist sold his practice to another dermatologist that does not offer the service. How do I get reimbursed for the unused portion of the services that I purchased?
You sue. How much money are we talking about here, Karen?
$2,500.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's money. That's worth it. You sue both. You sue both dermatologists and let them figure out what they're going to do. Because your contract is with the first dermatologist. The second dermatologist bought your contract.
Okay.
All right? So.
Okay. Yeah. Now.
Just hit them both.
How do I find out where the retired dermatologist is? Because
they're not going to tell you. You can do a little research. Skip tracing today is part of it. It's available because you can find almost anybody. On the other hand, you can simply sue the second dermatologist if you can't find the first one. I mean, believe me, somebody owes you $2,500, and probably it's the second dermatologist that owes it because he bought the practice. And when you buy the practice, you buy liabilities and you buy assets.
Oh, right. And he is part of an LLC.
Doesn't matter. You sue the LLC.
Okay.
Yeah, you sue the company itself, but you'll get yours. Yeah, but it's small claims. Isn't that lovely?
Okay.
By the way, what's wrong with your skin that you need a dermatologist? Like chancres and splotches? Is that what's going on?
Age spots.
Age spots?
Age. A-G-E.
Yeah, no, I got it. How old are you, Karen?
I'm not telling you.
Oh, see, there you go. You ruined it. You ruined it for me, Karen. All right, we'll take a break. This is Handle on the Law. Law, marginal legal advice, where I tell you, you have absolutely no case. Terry. Hey, Terry, welcome to Handle on the Law.
Hi, Bill Handel. Thank you for accepting my call.
Sure.
And the work you do. This is kind of a COVID-related deal. My wife last year was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. So we decided to have a family reunion. Set it for Easter time in Arizona, Scottsdale. We live in Arcadia. And paid two payments via credit card that total about $10,300.
All right, who paid what?
One week in Scottsdale.
Oh, a week in Scottsdale?
Yeah.
And it was, $10,000 you said?
Yeah, because it could hold. It's the only place over there that could really hold 20 people and do what we needed to do.
Got it.
And because it's a whole family coming from
Seattle. I understand.
That kind of stuff. And so COVID, and we did it through VRBO and a local property manager in Scottsdale. In March, right around the 30 day before we were coming, we made the decision, we're going to stay with this because we don't know if we're going to get another one.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Anyways, 3 days later, Governor Newsom had the shelter in place order, and so we immediately canceled. VRBO refunded the $500, their processing fee, the property manager said via email, he was kind of unresponsive, but he did say he'd take care of it. And then weeks went by, no response. So we went to our credit card and said we want to dispute it. They reversed half of that. And then later, after all the paperwork you put together and the stuff, they reversed it back to where now I'm still out $10,000.
Yeah.
So my question is, Arizona small claims is only a $3,500 limit.
Yeah, that's a problem. That's a problem. So here's where you are. It's $10,000 is really expensive to find an attorney because it's almost not worth it. $3,500, you're waiving $6,500 of it. And so you have to sue. Now, you can sue on your own. In other words, you don't need to go to small claims court. You can file a superior court case. It's a little bit more complicated. The paperwork is a little more specific, but you can do it and simply say it was a breach. You know, and the defense is, hey, let me tell you, the fact that you couldn't get here is not our problem. We don't have a shelter-in-place order, or we didn't at that time, and you could have easily come here. You could have taken a bus. You could have walked. It is not our problem. And that is their – that's the defense.
That's going to be their defense. 3 days after Governor Newsom, the governor in Arizona did the same thing.
All right, so you couldn't go to Arizona. So you could not get into that locality at all.
Correct.
All right. Then you go to court and their defense is effectively force majeure, saying, it's not our problem. And then we'll see what a court has to say. I don't know which way courts are going because it's such early days. But in the end, you know, all you can do is sue them. And I would dispute with the credit card company, them not reversing it, saying, hey, they wouldn't let me go. I want to dispute. I paid for this and they couldn't produce. Because they're appeal
to my credit card also.
Yeah, appeal that. Someone's made a decision to not reverse it or reverse part of it and then turn around and went back. So you owe the entire amount. You go, hey, I want to talk to someone about that. How do you not reverse the charges when they won't let me go there?
Yep.
What part of this am I having hard understanding? I buy a movie theater ticket, and I got guards in front saying you can't come in. And I go to my credit card company and say, I want my $15 back. I want to reverse it. And they say, no. I went, hey, they wouldn't let me in the door. They couldn't produce. And that's exactly what you're arguing. It's not a question of I didn't know that the Arizona was under Shelter in Place Act at that time. That's where I got a little confused. But if they wouldn't let you in.
There was also the son that's in Washington State, same thing within the same week.
Yeah, no, it's I would go to the credit card company and let them worry about it. And then at the same time, you have to sue. It's just it's a mess. This whole COVID thing is just a god awful mess. Hi, Rose. Rose, welcome to Handle on the Law.
Always putting them in the
news. Hi, Rose.
Hello.
Yes. What can I do for you, Rose?
Okay. I'm going to try to articulate this so that we don't have to spend too much time.
Yeah. Why would you ever want to do that on this show? All right. Let's move forward.
I've heard of.
Good. Because you know how much grief I'm going to give you. Yes.
78-year-old mother lived in a senior apartment complex. She started to get sick, so my 60-year-old sister was going to go take care of her, but before she could do that, had to get permission from the management and a doctor's note. They then approved my sister to move in. My mother passed away 3 weeks later. The rent was paid or is paid through the end of August. And my sister informed them that my mom had passed and she wanted to know if she could continue to stay there. They told her, no, you have to be out. So then the manager came the other day and said, what's your status? My sister said, I just can't seem to find a place right now. It's very expensive. So I need more time. I can pay you the month of September if you will allow me to stay. She said, no. So then she came back about 2 hours later, and she took
rent through the 4th of September.
And okay.
And that's going to be out by the 4th.
All right. And?
My question is, because she accepted payment, is there anything that we can do to enforce her to be able to stay?
Only to the point where the end of all that does is stop the eviction, and the eviction would have to start on the day that the payment ended. In other words, if you've paid up to the 4th, then an eviction cannot be filed prior to the 4th. But after the 4th, no question. They don't have to take the money. What happens is when you talk about when people take rent. So let's say I'm renting an apartment to you, and it's due on the 1st of the month. And then you're 3 days late, or you're 2 days late. I give you a 3-day notice to pay rent or quit. You have 3 days in which to come up with the money. If you do, I can't evict you. Unless I give you just a 30-day notice or a 60-day notice, your normal eviction. But as far as the payment is concerned, if you make the rent, it's only good for that month. So the fact is, so your rent is paid till the 4th of September, and then the landlord's saying, but I want you out after that, right?
Right.
So where do you think you can say, because you let me pay through the 4th, now I have the ability to stay here forever?
Well, I mean, I'm offering to pay you the rent.
Yeah, and they don't have to accept it. They don't have to accept it.
They don't.
Nope.
No, they don't.
Nope, nope.
Right.
All right. That's, you know, landlords, people think that you have the absolute right to stay in various places. You do when it's rent control. Assisted living facilities are under a whole different set of rules. All right, this is Handle on the Law. If you're injured and need a lawyer, go to handleonthelaw.com.
KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk.
Welcome back to Handle on the Law. Hey, Kim. There you are. Welcome
Hi.
To Handle on the Law. Yes, ma'am.
About 2 months ago, I received a box of 24 high-end socks labeled sample. They were sent to me by mistake. Retail's about $300. I called them right away, and they called me back and told me they'd send me a return label. Well, several weeks later, still no return label. I started calling them once a week, called them three or four times. Finally, somebody called me back, told them I didn't have a return label. Every time you and I'd call, I'd tell them what was going on. This is where it gets dicey. Then the lady says, this lady, I've talked to her before because I like these socks. I buy these socks. Tells me she's going to send me to my email, and I have to print my own label out to send them back. And I'm like, I'm quarantining. I'm old. And I have asthma. I'm not going anywhere. Well, don't you have a label maker at home? No, I don't have that at home. So then they're supposed to send me something for UPS, and she gives me the UPS number to send it back. Well, I wrote that on a napkin, and I've lost it. I've done far too much work to send these.
All right, Kim. Well, you haven't done far too much work. The issue. The issue is whether legally you have to return them or not. Your problem is, Kim, is you did this all via phone calls. As opposed to emails.
Yeah, I don't email.
Wow.
that's too much work.
Emailing is too much work. Do you have a computer?
No, I have an iPad. So when you type, it's like finger pushing.
Yeah,
on
I do the
letter.
Same thing. I'd still rather you have it on. I'd still much rather you have it on in writing with an email. Because then, assuming they want, so at the end of it, let's say 6 months from now, they go, hey, we sent you $300 worth of socks. We want them back. We sent it to you by mistake, which is, you know, it happens. And you're not entitled.
I don't mind sending their socks back.
I'm sorry?
I don't mind it. I do not
I
mind
understand.
Sending
that's,
their socks back. I just don't want to work. So
all right, Kim,
it, you know?
Kim, that's why you want to put it in writing and say, here's the deal. I will gladly return them. I need a box
and I need a label. I need a full UPS. Okay, fine. I need a label printed up. I don't have access to print my own label. Boom, out it goes. Now they respond or don't respond. And what happens is if they don't, you email them again saying, hey, in reference to my first email, you see, it's all in writing, Kim. All these phone calls mean nothing because they can just say, no, or we misunderstood. Emails you can't misunderstand. So just go ahead and take your finger and peck and do it. Then after the second or third time, you leave it alone. You keep them around. And, you know, at some point there is a time where you simply say, okay, you know what? I figured you refused to send me my, my label. You obviously don't want them back. Hey, I'm going ahead and I've just kept them. Thank you very much. And then they start bitching and screaming. And incidentally, I get stuff for free all the time. I'll get something. I bought a rower, for example, and they sent an additional little gizmo. Then what ended up happening was I canceled the rower. They still sent out this little thing they had. I don't remember, some kind of a massage thing. They still sent it out. I reordered the rower. I changed my mind. So I got the rower with the massage thing. I had a rower. I had two massage things. I emailed them. They didn't respond. Okay, thank you. And I've never heard from them on that issue again. So a lot of things slip through the cracks when they mislabel, they send through things, people return where it's free FedEx or free UPS through Amazon, et cetera. And it's tremendous how many things fall through the cracks. And even when they know, Kim, they've fallen through the cracks, it's not worth it for them to follow up and make sure it's sent back and make sure that they're in good shape and they're still wrapped up. So they just drop it. Kim, write a couple of emails, follow up saying, hey, I wrote you, haven't gotten anything back. You have to send me the label ready to go. I would even ask for a box. I want a box that I can return these because it's not their issue that you've kept them in a box or not. You know, why make it easy for them? Mm-hmm. Why make it easy? Sure. And then after a while, okay, thanks very much. Appreciate the gift. And if they send you a bill, you go, no, thank you. Look at my phone. Go ahead.
For the first phone call, I said, hey, there's a pair of socks in there. I like, can I keep them, for sending them back? And she said, sure. So I get a label. I slap a box. I get a pair of socks. That'd be cool, but what I was going to do is, so I can tell them, these are all the times I contact you.
Yeah, you can say that in the email. Yeah, you can say that. I mean, that's not proof you did. The proof that you did is that you did. You don't have that when you do it verbally. Okay, this is Handle on the Law.